A note to listeners, the following podcast contains content that may not be suitable for all audiences. Discretion is advised.
But I was told, and all of us were well aware of the sensitivity of working this case, as well as the danger to it. When we got to this area, the dog showed an obvious and an immediate change of behavior and alerted exactly where this fire was.
You are listening to Partners in True Crime. We are your hosts, Rob and Cindy Dorfman.
Today we wanted to give our listeners an update on the case and explain why we are replaying some segments from the previously aired episodes.
Since the BIA has taken over the investigation, the case has been moving along at a steady pace, and there's a lot of new information that we are not privy to. However, we can report that Jesse Haynes, Colt's brother, was arrested a few weeks ago and pled guilty to burglary and a felon in possession of a firearm. Jesse is looking at 15 years of prison time and 15 years probation.
We also learned that the BIA did question Jesse Haynes inside of jail, but we don't know exactly what was said. But if we receive more information, we will let you know.
Right now, we are replaying a few segments that we feel will play a big role in the investigation as it continues to heat up.
First up is the segment from the Human Remains episode, where elite cadaver dog handler Trace Sargent takes us through her search of the burn pit, ground zero of where we believe Molly and Colt were.
After that, we'll hear the nervous tipster who called us and reported some unusual activity that happened near Long Hollow Road.
Hello.
Hi, Tracy. It's Cindy and Rob.
Hey. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, so we're really happy for you to be on the show and to do this. I mean, just to start off, just tell us a little bit about your background. We know your background, just for the audience's perspective. Well, but we would just want to get your perspective because you were there during a crucial moment. Obviously, anything you know about the case would be great, too. Everybody's been sharing tidbits of information that they have gleaned over the time of working on this case. And, you know, we're talking to all law enforcement. We're talking to witnesses. We're talking to everybody. As you know, that's how we do things.
Sure. Well, fantastic. Okay, so you guys need my specific input from the canine side of things,
sure.
Correct?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, great. Okay, well, fantastic. So the first question, how much do you want my background?
Just give us a brief summary of like how you got into this and, you know, how you became a federal agent to do this and federally authorized to cadaver dogs, and tell us a little bit about your dogs.
I have been involved in missing person cases for over 28 years, specializing in missing persons through the use of canine resources. In effect, I have dogs that are trained to find people both dead and alive. I am a retired law enforcement officer, but I've been doing these type of searches on a volunteer basis for numerous agencies, both at the local, regional, and national, and even international levels. So my involvement in this particular case, I was contacted by the private investigator that was leading the investigation for a member of Molly's family spearheading this, and reached out to Mr. Klein to investigate this from the private part of it, as well as in cooperation and in collaboration with law enforcement officials. So as they obtained tips and leads, he contacted me, and there were some areas that they were interested in searching. And those areas of interest was tied directly into where Molly and Cole were last seen, which was in the car with Pond. And the information that they had received that the car was found at this location, and they had that exact location. We did go to those areas, as well as some other areas of interest in that vicinity. Getting into the specifics of what we did, and we did several days of searches. One of the things that was highlighted, and we did not know this afterwards, but I was told, and all of us were well aware of the sensitivity of working this case, as well as the danger to it. They did tell me that there's a possibility people might be watching us, so we did have protection watching me and my dog Chance, just as a safety measure. We were not fortunately approached or confronted by anybody while we were there in a threatening manner. We did have a few people that were giving us some tips and leads as we were there. Specifically, one farmer talked about several things that led us to a specific area, and we had some interesting results there. And what he conveyed to us was several things. One, there was a couple that was out in the area, I believe, riding four-wheelers or ATVs, something like that, and they reported something smelling bad. They didn't know exactly what it was, and they didn't provide any more details as far as this farmer was concerned, but it was on his property. So he investigated it, and when he went into that area, there was a fire there, and it was a very, very hot fire. So he said that law enforcement came out there and investigated it, did a number of other things. And we were that really piqued our curiosity. And we asked him, could you take us to this area where this fire was? Please note that we had already been searching for hours at this time. No results, no change of behavior indications by the search dog. When we got to this area, the dog showed an obvious and an immediate change of behavior and alerted exactly where this fire was. So just to paint a picture to the listeners, this is a large rural agricultural area. No barns or structures or any areas that you can see other than woods, fields. And where the fire was actually dried creek bed, which was probably 15 feet wide or so. And if I had to estimate, this was probably a couple hundred yards from where the car was found, as far as the crow flies. And mind you, there were thick patches of wood. So if someone wanted to walk from the car to this location, it may be, you know, somewhat longer. But as far as the crow flies, it was probably a couple hundred yards or so. So when we got to this area, the dog, and mind you, we had been searching already for hours and hours. And I know Mr. Klein and the other investigators were really interested in some areas that we searched previously, and they really felt a high degree of confidence that the dog would, you know, show us something or indicate to something in those areas, and he did not. So we were able to clear those areas pretty quickly. The farmer led us to this particular area of interest. So when we got to there, they had already seen Chance working for hours at this time, and they even noticed a change in his behavior. His change of behavior was immediate. It was very obvious. It was very noticeable. And he immediately alerted to this dry creek bed right in the middle of it. So as I'm standing there trying to figure out, all right, first of all, why would there be a fire here? Was it lightning? Was there a campfire? Was there even a possibility of some kind of machinery? Trying to justify other than some kind of criminal justification why a fire would be set here. And there really wasn't any. It was in the middle of this dry creek bed. It made no sense why a fire would be placed there. That was the exact same area where this couple had reported some type of foul odor. So it was just a very suspicious circumstances. But what really was interesting as far as from the dog's behavior, we had actually searched what we call upstream from this dry creek bed for hours, as well as the surrounding areas. The dog did nothing. Everything at where this fire happened and everything downstream in this dry creek bed, the dog alerted and had obvious change of behavior. That was the only area that he showed any changes, any alerts or indications throughout the days that we had searched during our visit at that time. So it was just a very, very interesting development and something that we really didn't expect. But we've learned over the years that go by any tips or leads, even if they sound strange or unusual, maybe if they don't make any sense, later on we find out it makes perfect sense. When we dug in that area, there were obvious ashes. And when I say ashes, we're not talking small amount. There would have to be a large amount of debris or something to be burned here. And we did ask the farmer, did you burn any debris here? Because sometimes farmers clear fields and they pile it up and burn it and things like that. He said, no. He said, this was not me. We don't know why this fire was set, and it was obviously deliberately set. It wasn't a natural occurrence. And then we went further downstream, and again, this was a dry creek bed. There's no water. And there was a collection of some logs and debris as when this area was wet or flooded, debris and logs would, you know, gather in certain points. The dog alerted in those areas as well, so we checked those extensively. We didn't find any tangible evidence that we could hold or identify, but it really made no sense why here, other than some type of connection that we felt and theorized that it had to be tied into Molly and Nicole. And even some theories of did maybe one of them climb a tree and fall here and there was blood. So we tried to think of why all these reasons why the dog is responding here. I know Philip was still looking into all of that. But as far as all the areas that we checked in those days of searching with Canine Chance, that was the only place he showed any changes, any alerts at all. And then you tie it back into these other tips and leads, a strange smell, the fire itself, and in close proximity to where the car was found. Just a lot of coincidences there. And I got to say, as an investigator, and I would speak for other investigators as well, coincidences really don't happen in an investigation. There's just too many. So you've got to figure out how does that tie in, because there's a difference between coincidence and fact. And most often these coincidences are fact. It's just a really, really interesting development in that. I did find out later on through Mr. Klein that they got tips and leads that we were in fact being watched. He didn't give me a lot of details other than that the people that were watching us were quite dangerous. So that's another coincidence there. Why would anybody be interested in us searching there unless they didn't want us to search there? Just a really, really interesting case. I know later on, let me back up. So as far as what we did with the dog that day, we cleared a massive amount of area. And then the dog alerted in that one particular area of interest. Anytime we work on these cases, whether it's a private investigator or law enforcement or even the family, and the only thing we can promise when we use these canine resources is that we don't know what's going to happen today. We don't know if we're going to find anything or if nothing is found. But the one thing I can promise and will promise every time we use these canine resources is that we will know more at the end of the day than we did at the beginning of the day. And that's what happened here. We did find out more information. We did find some interesting developments, and we knew more at the end of the day than we did at the beginning of the day. Now, how does all that tie in to Molly and Cole? I know the investigators are still looking into all of that. And it's been my experience. Sometimes this takes months or even years. But once it's found out, and I always ask for the investigators, once these cases are concluded and solved, is to let me know, you know, what they find out, because it's always interesting to see how the dog's responses actually do tie in to what happened once we find out, you know, more details. So that's what happened on that particular search.
Based on your experience, I mean, you've been doing this for 20 plus years, there are remains there.
So the question we get oftentimes is that Chance, being what we call a human remains detection dog, most people know them as cadaver dog. What does that mean when these dogs have a change of behavior, or what most people say, you know, alert or indication? What they're telling us is that there is human remains scent in that area. That's all they're telling us. It's very similar. In fact, it's exactly like a drug dog or a bomb dog. When they alert to a car or to a dumpster or something like that, they cannot tell us what's in there. They can simply say, hey, the scent I've been imprinted on, I'm smelling this scent coming from this location. So think of it, a lot of people are able to interpret and imagine and picture these cadaver dogs like drug dogs a little bit better when, again, a drug dog alerts on a car. The handler cannot say there's a pound of marijuana or there's 5 pounds of cocaine or whatever in there. So for me, as a canine handler of an HRD dog, I cannot tell you what is causing this dog to alert in this area other than human remains scent. So we, meaning the human part of this equation and the human part of the investigation, that's the investigators with law enforcement, other investigators, is to go in and say, why did this dog alert here? And can we find tangible evidence to tie it directly to what we're investigating? Or does it have anything to do with this investigation or nothing? A good example is that we've worked some cases where the dog alerts to, let's say, a garbage can in the bathroom, and there's some used Finimin products in there. The dog alerts exactly, and we've actually had this happen in several murder cases. The dog alerts to this bathroom garbage can, we reward it, and then it goes into the couch where the person was shot and killed. It's an actual case we worked. She was asleep on the couch and she was shot in the head. The dog acted exactly the same way when it alerted to the couch. So we can say, in the bathroom has nothing to do with our case, but on the couch it has everything to do with our case. So that's the same thing here, is that the investigators search the areas to determine if there's any tangible evidence as well as material witnesses or something to tie that particular area of where the dog responded to the criminal case that they are looking at. From a dog handler's perspective, as I would say to any investigator or courts, is that the dog is trained to detect human remains scent, and that's what he did in that area. And that's all I can report, unless we find tangible evidence to say otherwise.
Okay, just for our reference, how much does the blood, how much blood needs to be there for the dog to pick up, volume-wise?
It has a lot to do with the environmental condition. Let's say if there was blood there, and then shortly afterwards there was a flood and it washed everything away, or if it was very, very dry conditions and the blood is a fluid and it's been absorbed very quickly by the heat and the temperatures. So it does have some variabilities there. I would say from the sensitivity of the dogs, we have seen that it doesn't take a lot of blood. I could not tell you an exact amount as far as, you know, fluid amount, but the dogs themselves, they're quite sensitive. And we do train, and I specifically train my dogs to what we call low thresholds. And the reason for that is because we do quite a bit of historical projects, meaning battlefields. In fact, we've done several of the last few months where individuals have been dead, you know, 200 or 300 years. So we train the dog for very, very low threshold so they can pick up very minute scent of human remains. So a part of it is the environmental condition, and part of it is the level of threshold that the dogs are trained.
Can I stop you for a second? I have a quick follow-up question here. Does the dog's reaction, like if the dog is hitting vigorously, does that equate with like a volume of blood or remains? Because you were telling us that the dog hit pretty vigorously in that area. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether or not if it's a little bit of blood, they just react a little bit, or if it's a lot of blood, if they, you know, they get in a frenzy. What was the dog's reaction based upon the dog's reaction? How much do you think was there?
So that's a really good question. And I would say, and it's a simplistic answer, the higher the scent, the more obvious the dogs are going to respond to it. So in this case, the scent itself and the reaction to and how aggressively and quickly the dog responded to this area, there was a good bit of scent for him to detect. The simple part of that would be, yes, if it's more scent, the dogs are going to be able to pick up that much more quickly and be a lot more animated, what we call change of behavior to that. Whereas, again, if it's lower scent and we see that they're picking something up that they can't quite figure out where it is because it's very small and it's really hard for them to detect, we've seen that change as well. I do want to note that scent itself is a living organism. So my job as a canine handler, the responsibility is to place the dog in an environment, if there is in fact scent, to put him in that environment where he can detect it. For example, early mornings, dusk and dawn are really ideal, what we call scent conditions, an environment where the scent and the conditions of the scent are going to be a lot more optimum and a lot more favorable for the dogs to detect. If we're searching at high noon until 5 or 6 o'clock at night, the scent itself is for lack of better words, it's going to be dead. It's going to be undetectable. Not to say that the dog is no good and the training that it's received is not good. It's just that if the scent isn't there, the dogs aren't going to pick it up. So it's my responsibility to make sure that, one, I place the dog in an environment at the time of day, even at the time of year, that's more favorable for the scent to be living, for the dog to be able to detect that. We were fortunate that the day that we did search, it did have some cloud cover. It wasn't high noon. It wasn't real hot conditions. So that in itself allowed the scent conditions, the living organism of this scent, to be favorable for the dog to detect itself.
So you basically got the best circumstances for your dog to find that scent.
Yes, we do.
Trace, this happened in 2013. How long after they went missing did you guys go out there with Chance?
I want to say, and I've got to look back on my notes, I want to say it was about a year later, maybe nine months, 12 months, something like that. So it wasn't immediate when we went out there. So if you're looking at, 12 months later, if there is in fact a body out there, it's going to be fully skeletalized. So the dogs are trained to find the full spectrum of human remains from a full-size body, the skin and the remains itself, as well as the skeletal part. And then any fluids themselves, too. And that was another thing that we thought about for this particular area. And this is, I think, important to share with the listeners as well. And we've had this happen several times, and it's been confirmed. There's been murder cases we've worked where the person was killed, and then later on, the person's body was removed. Whether, hours later, days later, weeks later, it varied. But what has happened is that when the body dies, it decomposes immediately. It may not be visually, we can't visually see it, but as soon as the body dies, the decomp process starts immediately. Well, we as human beings are made up primarily of fluid. So those fluids are going to be absorbed into the ground, and it's what we call residual scent. So even after somebody's body has been removed from the area, and we've had this happen in several cases, the dogs still detect what we call residual scent. So that's a possibility as well. So it's not about, and that's one thing that's helped me over the years as a canine handler. When I got out of the mindset that I'm looking for a body or a person, instead of looking at it, I'm looking for scent, my success rate and the dog's success rate actually increased.
How often has evidence that your dog discovered has been the result of someone being caught and convicted?
Oh, goodness. Rob, I could not give you a number on that. I've been doing this so many years, and I've probably worked, I would say, close to 15, maybe 1,800 cases over the years, and that's both dead and alive cases, good guys and bad guys. I really couldn't give you a number.
Can you give me a percentage-wise, like 20%, 30% of the times the dog hit on something that resulted in evidence that contributed to the conviction? Not that it was the sole piece of evidence, but that was part of the overall case against a killer?
Well, I would say this. Two things on that. In all the years that I've been doing this, we've never missed anything. Meaning, if there was a body there, if there were human remains there, if there was even a live person there, we found them. Secondly, the dogs themselves really are a multi-layered thing. What I mean by that is that they are a resource and a tool for us, but they are also what we call part of the investigative team. And for me, not only as a law enforcement officer, taking the canine part of that equation out, but also as a canine handler, I would say, and to answer your question, it really does take teamwork to solve these cases. And the dogs are part of the team effort with one common goal, with multiple layers. And that is, the common goal is to find that person and where they are so we can help these families through this terrible, terrible tragedy and this very, very darkness that they're in. And then ultimately holding those individuals accountable.
Well, I would like to surmise that because you've done this for so long and you're the go-to person with your dog who we've met and who we've worked with, that you've probably made a significant impact on a lot of these cases.
Absolutely.
Well, I appreciate that. I do. And for me, the families and the investigators motivate me to continue doing this. And my biggest...
let me say my biggest hope every case that I work, and especially in these homicide cases. I have seen families torn apart, destroyed. That person that has been killed is not the person, it's not the only person impacted or even dies from that event. And I've also seen firsthand, so sad to say this, but it's true, there's a lot worse things out there than death. And I've seen what these things do to families. So my biggest hope, not only in doing this, but in my life, is that as I help these families and these officials, because it affects them as well, is that there is no such thing as closure in these situations. The word closure is not an accurate statement. When we find these bodies, and even when the person is prosecuted and sent to jail for life, there's no closure to this family. It's a nightmare that continues for the rest of their lives.
We agree. There's no closure here.
No.
Paul is not doing this for closure. She's doing this to find the people responsible for this.
Yeah.
And hold them accountable. And hold them accountable. Because right now they're walking around free and all the evidence is pointing in a particular direction. I want to talk about a little bit about when you were there. You talked about Phil saying that you were being watched by dangerous people. Because we were there in that same area, probably a few years after you, in that same pit. And
they were watching us, and I had a laser on my head.
Mm-hmm.
And my director of photography said, "There's a laser on your head." And I looked up and I was like, oh my God, they're watching us in the tree. I mean, I could see them. They weren't that far away.
And so my question to you is, how many times have you had to work under those conditions where you potentially could get hurt, your dog could get hurt, or is that something rare?
Well, I actually used to do a lot of fugitive searches, live searches, people that, you know, running away from police. For a variety of reasons, from rapists, murderers, killers, cop killers, thugs, all the above. So yes, in every one of those, I could have gotten hurt or killed. The dog could have gotten hurt or killed. The officers with me could have gotten hurt or killed. So I've actually done that quite a bit. The Molly and Cole case was a little unusual in that even in homicide cases, these bad guys don't want the body to be found. They don't want these questions answered. There have been some cases where there's been an element of danger, that there's been a safety issue. I would say, and I think I speak for everyone involved in this case, and certainly any investigators and law enforcement and canine handlers involved in any of these cases, that's not going to stop it. It doesn't bother me. You know, I'm alert. I'm aware of it. But I'm really at peace with it. If I die doing this, I'm okay with it because I'm dying for a purpose. That's the purpose in my life and the purpose in helping these families and officials. So it's not something that stops me. It makes me aware. And I would just say to anybody out there that we're not going to give up. And I tell the families and officials that on every search. And I can see it in their eyes when we come out of the woods and you know, did you find them? It's like, no, I'm sorry. I wished we did. And it's just heartbreaking. You literally see and feel their heartbreaking right in front of you. And I tell them, but please note, this does not mean we stop here. It's just the beginning. However long it takes, whether it takes another month, another year, another 10 years, another 20 years, we're going to keep looking. And I would say that about this case and any other cases that we're involved with.
So the actual property, the NIP property, has never been searched the way it needs to be searched. This particular part that you searched was adjacent to the NIP property, probably about maybe 200 yards from the property line. My mm-hmm. question to you is, there's been an effort to get a search warrant to search that property. Phil has told us about it. We've had local law enforcement saying it. One warrant has been officially rejected by a judge for a ridiculous reason. Should a warrant be issued, search warrant be issued for that property, and it's opened up to law enforcement, would you participate in that search as well?
I told Philip and the investigators, if y'all get the okay, I will pay my own plane ticket to come out there and search. Absolutely. I would be involved and am involved 1,000%. So all I need is the phone call and the okay, and me and my dog will be on the first plane out and check that area, and we will check every square inch of it and literally leave no stone unturned.
The other thing I want to ask you is, as an investigator, based upon the circumstances and the witness. I don't know how much you know about this case now. Do you have any opinions about what you think happened?
Well, let me add to the previous statement about what the dog did and this possible site of where, you know, maybe two bodies had been burned up and whatnot. I will say this, and I say this with a high degree of observation. People, and I say this with respect, people, especially men, don't do anything for nothing. They are very action-oriented. They're very goal-oriented, and they don't exert that amount of time and energy and effort for nothing. So why there? Why did someone, presumably a male or males, go through all of this trouble in this particular area? Why are individuals so concerned about other people being in that area? Why are people not allowing other people to search their property? So to me, there's a lot of, it's too many coincidences. And again, people, especially men, do not do something for nothing. So I would say that there is, it's a very compelling area. It's a very interesting area. And I think it does, I would not be surprised that ultimately it will be tied to this case somehow, some way. I will say that much. You know, it's a cliche, but there's some truth to it. If you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to hide. Guilty people, or I should say innocent people, have nothing to hide and generally very open and willing for us to search. And we've even had suspects, you know, that were, you know, persons of interest. We searched their property and they would say, listen, come on my property. I want to be taken off the list. If this is what it takes, then so be it. We go on there, we search. It's like, you know what? What we're looking for is not here. And we take them off the list. So I would say to anyone that involved in this case that does not want their property searched, I would say if you want to get your name off the list or, you know, a person of interest, we would be more than happy to come out there, search it, and then we move on from there.
We agree.
100%.
And I think that's a perfect place to end this. It's a call to action to the potential suspects, anybody who the law enforcement feel that is involved in this. And if the Knipp family is listening, if you want your name off the list, if you don't want Paula continuing to make this case as big as possible, just let them on the property. Let's clear this out. Check them off the list. So thank you. Thank you for saying that. And I think that's an important thing to say. And we appreciate the time that you've spent with us. And
thank you so much, Trace.
And keep on doing the work you're doing. And I'm sure we'll work together again as we have, because you're amazing and your dogs are amazing. And thank you very much.
Well, and I would say and echo that. Thank you, as well as everyone involved in this case, the importance and taking the time and energy and the passion to tell this story, because it needs to be told and continues and needs to be continued to be told until, again, people are held accountable and we find the answers that these families and officials so rightfully deserve, and ultimately give them the peace that they deserve as well. So thank you.
Right back at you.
Thanks, Trace. A tipster called in to give us some shocking information. The woman was terrified to speak because of threats that had been made on her life if she ever told anyone what she knew. But after listening to the podcast, she decided that it was time for her to tell her story because it could help us, and we're very grateful for her bravery. People out there listening, I just want to reiterate that we can't be afraid of these bullies, because if we are, they will continue to hurt people. The only way that we are going to be able to get to the end of this is by people like this coming forward and telling the truth, no matter how scared they are.
We have withheld her name as well as some other names she mentions to protect their identities.
Sorry, hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm okay.
Okay.
Thanks for calling. Paula said that you wanted to talk to us, so I wanted to call you back because we're trying to help her. So if you have anything.
Okay. It was to the point to where I was being threatened with my life and my kid's life if I ever said anything.
Understood.
Understood.
I tried to say something years back, but then that happened and I got scared, so.
All right. So we'd love to hear what you have to say.
Why don't you tell us what you want to tell us, and then I'll ask you some questions that Paula asked me to ask.
Okay. I was just told that a friend of mine was working that morning, and they seen the car fly by, and they said that they stopped on Oswalt Road, I guess. At the end of Oswalt Road, there is a Elise Road with old wells and stuff on it. And they was working on the first well, and they said that they stopped at the third well and was there for like 15 minutes. And I told my ex-husband about it, who used to be a cop, and he went himself to look, and he said he found some clothing, but it didn't match the description of what Molly or Colt were wearing, which I'm thinking, well, that doesn't matter really, because if the guy that did it, you know, has DNA all over his freaking clothing and shit, he's going to shed it.
When did this happen?
It was the next day. It was on that Monday, the morning of this. Is that what you're saying?
It was like 5 something in the morning, they said, when they was at work.
And they saw someone at the well?
Mm-hmm. Apparently it's an old well. And it's supposed to be at Elise Road at the end of Oswald Road. So I couldn't exactly tell you what road. And that's just all I was told.
And what did they see there? Did they see Molly or Colt or anyone?
They just seen the car fly by. And they said the car shut down there for about 15 minutes. And then it just flew back out.
The car that was in the chase?
Yes.
And then the person that told you this, was it someone that you trust?
Yes.
What do they think happened?
They think that the bodies were being dumped.
In the well. It's interesting because we thought that the car was moved to that spot later. So can you just tell me one more time so that it's clear? Because I'm still trying to wrap my brain around this.
Okay, this was back whenever I was using dope. And my friend worked on the oil rig, and he told me that he seen them fly by, and then he stopped at the second or third well. He was pretty sure it was the third well. And they sat there for about 15 minutes. The car didn't move for like 15 minutes. And then they just hauled ass out of there. They didn't have any idea what was going on.
Did they know?
Until later.
Did they see who was in the car?
No, they didn't say.
Did they know what car, what kind of car it was?
It was the one in the description of the car that they was last seen in, the red one.
The Honda?
Mm-hmm.
And so who told you not to?
They told me that if I was to ever see anything, then me and my kids' lives would be in danger. So it's taken me a while, but now I tried to say something several years back, but I lost my courage and didn't.
Well, we understand why. Right. This is a very scary situation. Okay, so Paula's going to want to know specific questions. So she's asking me right now, are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. It's been weighing on me for like ever. So, you know, it just feels good to kind of get it off my chest.
Well, thank you so much for doing that. I know it's really hard.
Like, I don't know if it's going to be of any help, but if it comes down to it, like later, I can even give you my ex-husband's name, the cop that went and checked it out.
Yes.
Because I told him about it. I trusted him.
Is he still in the area?
And he lives in Hilton.
When he went down there, what did
he's not a cop anymore.
Mm-hmm.
What did he see when he went down there?
He said that he found some clothing kind of scattered underneath the brush and stuff. But he said that's all he's seen. And he said it didn't match the description of what they were wearing when they were last seen.
And it's an oil well?
It was supposed to be a lease road at the end of Ellsworth Road. And it's supposed to be the second or third well. He said he's pretty sure it was the third well in because they couldn't really see what was going on. They just seen the car go down there and park, and then it hauled us out of there.
And this happened on the morning of July 8th.
That night, that morning that they went missing, yeah.
And what time did he say it was?
They was at work. It was like 5 something in the morning. They had just gone on shift.
So it couldn't have been Molly because she was talking to someone at 6:30 in the morning. Maybe it was Colt. Did he think that, from your ex-husband's perspective, because he was a cop, did he think that maybe they, what was his thoughts? What did he think had happened?
I don't know if he kind of, because I told him what I was told, you know, about me and my kids would pay if I ever said anything. So I don't know if he just like shrugged it off as nothing. I don't know if he actually really even went and looked, but that's what he told me, was that he found some clothing, didn't match the description, and that's basically where he left it with me.
Did he leave the clothing there?
Yeah, he said he like started picking it up with a stick to see if there was like blood or anything on it, and there was nothing, and he just put it back down. Something about, I think he said a red shirt. I don't remember what else. It's been so many years ago. But I do know he said a red shirt. I remember that part.
The person that told you the information, we won't tell this name out in the public, but Paul is asking me, who was it?
See, this is where it gets scary.
Yeah, yeah. No,
I understand. If you don't want to tell us, we understand.
No, but Paul, I know, but
I
Paul,
mean, I can.
Yeah, Paul is asking.
My name is like to be left out.
No, your name.
100%.
This person's name we're not going to put out there either, because I don't want to get this person into a situation, because it's dangerous.
Well, there's two of them.
Okay. And who's the other one? And where did they work?
For some oil field company.
Okay. So they were out there by the wells.
I believe, but I'm not positive.
Who was the other one?
Don't quote me. I'm not positive.
It's okay, honey. Thank you so much for doing this. You're trying to do the right thing and help this family. It's very nice of you. It's okay. We just want to help Paula. Okay.
Me too. This has been tearing me up for years, but I just can't do it anymore. So.
Were you friends with the Knipp family?
No. Didn't even know of them until all that happened.
But you knew Molly and Colt?
Mainly friends with Colt's family.
I'm so sorry. This is a horrible thing to everyone has had to go through. What is Colt's family saying about this? I mean, we've spoken to his brother in the past. I just want to...
Jesse?
Yeah.
I haven't talked to him in so long, I don't know.
Did these two guys that told you this information, why did they tell you?
It was brought up in conversation over the internet because we was just, you know, going through our phones and shit, and we were high, and he started talking about it, and then he told me, he's like, you can't really say anything to anybody because they will come after you and your family. Yeah, I get it. You know, I understand. Second time I was told by and he told me it was like almost verbatim, word for word, exactly what told me. So I'm like, there's no way that can be fake or made up. I mean, something went down there. I mean, I don't know what went down there, but something went down there.
And both of them worked for that oil company?
Pretty sure or is that they worked for.
So they were both out there. Is that what happened? They both saw it?
Yeah. You could go through the company and maybe figure out which wells were running that day, which wells are shut down. Your best bet would be because they was on the first well off the lease road that morning. So whatever well was running that morning, you're going to go two or three more down. And that's where all of this was supposed to have happened.
Did he see how many people were in the car?
Didn't say. He just said it flew by.
Was he scared?
And then it flew by when it went back out.
Were they scared?
No, it was just, they just thought it was some drunk kids playing around.
So why did they tell you later that they said that your life would be in danger if you said anything?
I guess because I know the Knipps.
So that's who they thought it was?
Yeah.
So it was at the end of Oswald. Can you just tell me that again so I can make sure it's clear for Paula?
Like, I'm not sure, like, how far down, but they said the end of the Oswald Road, there's a lease road. And it goes off to the left. And these guys were working on the first well. And apparently the car stopped it. Like the second and third well passed them. And it stopped for about 15 minutes, they said. And they said to haul the ass back out of there. So they just figured that they was down there taking shots or doing bumps.
And then when they heard about all this, how did they put
it? That's when they put two and two together. And like that. That's what happened. I guess it's, like I said, I mean, it's just hearsay. I don't know for sure, but I figure I know this much and it's at least worth checking out.
Well, you were threatened over it. Why would they threaten you if it wasn't accurate?
Yeah, that's why I haven't said anything in so long.
Understandable.
Really
understandable. I'm sorry you have had to go through this.
I haven't had to go through anything compared to what the family's gone through.
I know. It's awful. It's so awful. But thank you so much for coming forward now. I mean, that's what we're asking people to do, because this has got to stop. This poor families have been suffering for so long, and
yeah,
it's too much now. That's why we're doing this, for Paula, you know, and for Cole.
I've dealt with a lot of death in my family over the past 3 months. It was like, whenever I started reading that, and then my aunt told me earlier that she heard the bodies had been burned, and I'm like... I have to say something. I just gotta get it off my fucking chest because I can't carry it anymore. Because if there is any truth to this story, then I need to just say it. Nobody else is going to, especially not the people that tell me not to say anything. So it's a good time to come forward. And it comes down to it, and you need just tell her to let me know. But otherwise, I really don't want to deal with it.
Sure, absolutely.
She's going to probably call you and ask you.
Yeah.
If that's okay with you.
Yeah.
You okay?
Yeah.
God bless you, okay? You God just did you. A really nice thing for these people.
I just hope that something comes of it and we can get some peace.
Me too.
Next time on Partners in True Crime.
In the coming weeks, we have some exciting things happening. We have received dozens of requests from our audience to speak to the corruption in the county. We have heard dozens of stories of how people have suffered because of these abuses of power by elected officials.
We're going to be discussing some of these stories with locals and experts to help initiate some changes in the community. We're also going to create an open forum on the podcast.
We're going to have an episode that is completely interactive. We want to hear from you. What are your questions or thoughts on the case? What would you like to discuss with us? And do you have any information to share?
Please submit your questions or comments with your phone number on the website if you would like to be on the podcast or you would like us to discuss your question or comment.
You can submit this information confidentially directly on the podcast at the bottom of the first page where it says contact.
We look forward to hearing from you.
Partners in True Crime is launching an exciting new podcast, The Killing Hour with Doc Bond. Famous criminologist and author Dr. Scott Bond will be joining Rob and I on a deep dive into true crime and serial killers. It'll be an exploration into the mind of one of the world's most notorious serial killers, Dennis Rader, aka BTK.
We will be joined by special guests featuring BTK's daughter, BTK's prison guard, New York Times best-selling author and Emmy-winning filmmaker Mark Olshanker, the creator of Mindhunters, and more.
Join us every Wednesday as we investigate the sadistic dark world of serial killers to understand what makes them tick. Learn the signs of these psychopaths who walk among us, because how well do you really know anyone?
If you have any information regarding the case, please contact the BIA at www.bia.gov/BIA/OJS/missing-murder-unit.
You can also call their hotline with tips at 1-833-560-2065 and email them directly at ojs_mmu@bia.gov.
And if you want to text them with a tip, text keyword BIAMMU and send your tip to 847-411.
Check the Partners in True Crime website for this and any additional information.
If you or anyone you know is suffering from a methamphetamine addiction, please contact the American Meth Addiction Hotline.
If you or anyone you know has been the victim of sexual abuse, please contact the National Domestic Violence Hotline. All rights reserved. This has been a production of 722 Media Content. Please visit our website where you can subscribe to the podcast, find show notes, and listen to Vi's original song, Take Me Back, written for Molly Miller.